Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like pro wrestling? Well, we like pro wrestling too. This week in the news, Goldberg hates how he went out. In the lazy river of wrestling criticism, ice cold takes on All In Weekend. And this week in Vader Club, my pick from Clash of the Champions 29, Dustin Rhodes versus Vader. I'm Jeff Hawkins. He's Chris Novembrino. Chris, give us your injury report.
Yeah, I'm on the IR list. So, as you know from last week's episode, that was abrupt, and I had to dip out. I had a gig to do out at Rio Rancho, and it was an outside venue. It was with a group called Elevated Roots. I will be playing with them in the future, actually next weekend. We'll have to figure out scheduling here. I'm going out to fabulous Durango, Colorado with them for a two-day reggae festival. You can go and check them out on Instagram. They actually have a following, and they have a single and a music video and everything. I'm sort of going to be their bass player, like their primary bass player for the foreseeable future, with the caveat that I have a shoulder surgery coming up on the horizon at some point that's going to sideline me for a couple of months and blah, 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 blah. But in the interim, I'm doing dates with them and it's fun. And we had our first date out at Rio Rancho, really good show. It was outside a place called The Block. It was hot out there and the sun was setting on the stage. We were setting up around 6 o'clock. It's Albuquerque, New Mexico, so sun doesn't really set until the 8 o'clock hour at this point of the summer. And sun was beating down on the stage and my bass strings were heating up. Now, I had my bass backstage before the set started. We got on stage. You can see pictures of me. I'm looking dapper, but it is hot. I am suffering to look good because it's about 100 degrees out there. And during the set, my bass strings start heating up. I don't really notice this because I'm actually learning these songs on the fly in some cases. There are some that I've had the chance to learn because I had joined the band on Monday, had a rehearsal on Wednesday, and then was gigging on Friday. Story of my life. And I'm on the stage and I'm still learning some of these songs on the go, and that's really what I'm focused on. I'm ripping and having a great set. At the end of set one, I look down at my finger, and my finger has a blister. You can see the wreckage of it a week later. It is a crescent moon shape to describe it for those of you listening. On the center of my index finger, I have not just a blister, but a burn that has been done by metal in the shape of a crescent moon. It is massive. It is the biggest blister I have ever gotten playing any show in my life, of which I've probably played, rough estimate, like 1,000. I don't know. It's hard number. I'd put it in the four figures, but like low four figures, like 1,000 to 1,050, something like that. Worst blister of my life. No doubt about it. I was trying to play guitar this week, couldn't put pressure on it. Can kind of like play. I still have my tip, My tip is fine. So thank God, like the primary callus didn't get damaged from it, because I'd be a very sad panda right now if that had happened. But this, oh Jesus, Jeff. I put a brave face on it, and in between set breaks, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna readapt. And you know, I've played enough guitar in my life that I ended up doing the entire second set, kind of primarily working through my middle finger, using my index finger as an adjunct, and just sort of thinking like, all right, lead on your middle, lead on your middle, lead on your middle. And the sun set, and I was able to get through it fine. And I don't have any more. Actually, that's not true. I have blisters on both these fingers on my picking hand because, yeah, that from working. That was more kind of in the appropriate range of like subcutaneous blister, not like giant volcano of like awful on my finger. Yeah, no, it was you suffer for art, Jeff.
Are you gonna be able to get through this show?
Oh, in this show?
Yes.
So I'm gonna wrap up here a little bit. I have a treatment and salve. In this case, Jeffrey, I'm gonna be delivering the burns.
Playing hurt. I love it. All right. Yeah. So Bill Goldberg had his retirement match on Saturday night's main event this week. The match was better than it had a right to be, I thought. It was a long match. It was longer than I thought it would be.
I thought it over-delivered in terms of the work, too. Yeah.
Problem was, it's network television, and they have a hard out, unlike everything else WWE and AEW does, which they are allowed to have overruns because they have sweetheart deals with the stations they're broadcast on. NBC ain't playing that, homie. And so we had a commercial break. We came back. 25 seconds of Goldberg's retirement speech, and we are to your local news. And Goldberg wasn't happy about it and decided to air out his grievances on Ariel Helwani. Went through almost all seven stages of grief while doing this. Went through every conspiracy possible, thinking that was possibly a rib, possibly that they wanted to make him look bad because he was a WCW wrestler, etc., etc. Here's my thoughts on this, Chris, because I am one who am sort of empathetic to Bill Goldberg's plight here.
I want to be, and he just...
And he can't let me.
He's one of these guys, right, where, like, in his professional career, he insisted on always being a babyface, and in his personal life, he just has this incredible knack for being a heel. Right?
Yes.
He's the victim here. I agree. I mean, let's keep it real. Do I need a 30-second commercial for Papa John's, or would I like that to have 30 more seconds to breathe? Yeah, I can find about the Shaq. I can find out about the Shaqaroni.
Cheeseburger pizza, pizza, or Goldberg.
His retirement speech. Right. In this sense, totally host. And I think if you got to him afterwards and been like, Bill, you know what? We want to do something on Monday to kind of like make that, give you a segment, give you your 5 minutes to actually do this and have the right send off or whatever. That would have been good. So like in this sense, I think WWE kind of dropped the ball. They could have done a get right here and cut this off at the pass. But then Bill Goldberg comes out and runs his mouth when Occam's razor here, you know, we don't need this grand conspiracy that there's a cabal of secret elites doing a religious ceremony in the forest to screw over Bill Goldberg, right? It's just the nature of network television, dude. You got screwed over by NBC. That's bad. WWE should do a get right on you, but they didn't. WWE should do a get right on you, but they didn't screw you over because you're in WCW. The people who give a shit about that are long gone, dude. Get over it.
Here's why I'm empathetic to Bill Goldberg in some ways. He is one of the biggest stars in wrestling history, whether you liked him or not during that WCW time. He probably deserves a nice send-off. I'm not sure WWE is the one to give it to him either. That's the problem here. And look, they are the biggest company in the world. They have purchased all the assets of WCW. He did work in WCW a few times, and he had a few nice runs late as well, when they kind of protected his aura. He agreed to this as opposed to kind of holding out for a pay-per-view, even though he probably would have wanted a pay-per-view, but I think WWE wanted him to retire. We are mutually using each other in this relationship.
And he got taken care of lovely in that final match. He got the visual victory over Gunther.
That said, if I were to ascribe malice where incompetence is a much easier answer, do you think, okay, the show's running long, and we can't cut something, possibly. Well, it's just Bill Goldberg. Do you think Triple H thinks Bill Goldberg was a bigger star than he was? Because I don't. And I'm not ascribing this as any sort of thing.
You know, it's like, let me explain myself real quick.
Okay. I'm saying this as it's easily disposable for people from WWE for Goldberg, because they were just using him to get the views on Saturday Night's Main Event, and they don't really care about the legacy of Goldberg.
I mean, I think they wanted to get views, but like, it's just hard for me to find malice when the entire final segment's built around Goldberg. I mean,
yeah, no, I don't think there's malice at all.
Right, like the what I was saying, or was about to say, was it'd be one thing if it was Goldberg's retirement speech, but before this was like the Roman Reigns segment. The Roman Reigns segment runs long. Questionably right. long with like stupid intros or something like that, or like Roman Reigns gives a promo, thus leaving Bill Goldberg 45 seconds for his retirement. Then all of a sudden, I am going like, okay, they kind of hosed the guy. Maybe there is malice there, but I just don't see it here.
Yeah, I don't either. Right? It's just, it was a failure to plan on WWE's part. They are usually the ones who go, okay, we have strict outs. Don't run over your time, et cetera, et cetera. And since they've gotten this Netflix deal and these other sweetheart deals, there's a little jam band culture going on in all of wrestling that needs to stop, because I'm tired of watching two-hour shows that take 2 hours and 20 minutes. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of eight-hour pay-per-views. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
I feel very, very strongly about that premise, right? Like, I think about it. I've been thinking about it in a much more broader philosophy of art thing. You are hard pressed to find examples of art where it is better for being overly long. Like, Charles Dickens is not actually better because of the sprawling passages. What we like about Dickens is actually in our mental edits of it. And so The classic pieces of lit that we like, I'm not going to meander too much on this, but like the classic pieces of lit we like, we tend to edit down. Like, In Your Head, Alice in Wonderland is like 150 pages. Go and actually look up what an actual copy of Alice in Wonderland is, right? You know, it's long. It's not
Grapes of Wrath and Moby Dick all have these chapters that could easily be taken out. I don't need to know about the whaling industry in the 18th century, and I don't need to listen about a turtle crossing the road. I'm sorry.
There's countless albums I could think of where the offerings on the album are actually pretty good. You just want to pare it down a little. An easy example that comes to mind right now is the Van Halen album Diver Down, which is like basically an EP's worth of material stretched out to an album. And if they had just edited that down to an EP, it would be a very sick EP on par with Van Halen 2 or Fair Warning. Instead, Diver Down kind of meanders a bit between highlights. You know, everything benefits from editing is my point. I'm finishing 18 songs. I'm probably going to go through after I get all the masters back and make a decision about what of those 18 songs I want on the album, what will be repackaged into something else. Like, editing, grouping, unifying themes, everything benefits from this. It's so hard to come up with an example where it's not like that. You know, here's one. Pavement's like Wowie Zowie, where the theme almost is eclecticism. Like, that's a great album. And it does meander. You know,
Woodstock was 3 days of peace, love, and music, but two of those days sucked. So,
I'm trying to find examples. You might go, the White Album is one of those things where it's like, yeah, you could edit down the White Album to one really tight Beatles album, but like, part of the White Album is like a document of where that those people were at that time.
Chicago's second album, which is a double album, is pretty good.
You're just if you have a scale here, the scale of like albums where it benefits from the sprawl versus pieces of art where editing and concision would benefit the piece of art, it's way on the other side for me, at least, bro.
All right, pushing out Goldberg a little bit on Saturday Night's Main Event. Jelly Roll made an appearance and will now be in a tag team match at SummerSlam. Him and Randy Orton versus Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul. I am mixed.
You know what I don't get, Jeff? Mm-hmm. The people for whom Jelly Roll does anything for.
Wow. Okay, you're being a music snob, and I get that.
No. I honestly, it's like all around. I just don't see it with this guy. He strikes me as unremarkable, kind of in every way.
Fair. I'm going more for the celebrity and wrestling trope, which has now been. I don't have a problem with it being used judiciously, to be honest with you. It's been a part of wrestling history for as long as I've been watching wrestling, and that's now 45 years or so, I would guess. My thing is, we don't need all the celebrities doing all the matches every year. And if I'm a wrestler, I'm kind of getting a little insulted. I mean, I get the eyeballs and I get the thoughts of, hey, they're going to bring, you know, media and stuff like that. But
no, but you're going to have to carry this guy. He stinks.
I'm a trained professional who's been doing this for years. And this guy does some country rap hybrid, whatever he's doing.
I mean, it's not Logan Paul, right? Like, this guy's.
Like, Logan Paul is awesome. In terms of athleticism. I mean,
Or Pat McAfee, right? You have certain guys where at least it seems like they're committed to the project of knowing how to work in the ring somewhat. Like, they're not trying to ever have a five-star classic, but they want to be able to do what they need to do well.
Look,
dude, this
Pat
guy
McAfee,
came in and
Pat
delivered
McAfee
it.
Pat McAfee was a punter, but being in the NFL is still possibly the hardest athleticism in terms of, you know, wear and tear on the body and whatnot, even if you are a punter. I get it, but he has a level of athletic prowess. Jelly Roll looks like a jelly roll.
He looks like a dad feebly trying to fight a professional wrestler.
Yes.
But, you know, it's dad. He's 43. He's about 40 to 50 pounds overweight, does not work out, has a desk job, and he's up there going, how dare you say that to my wife? And he's trying to punch a Randy Orton type of guy with a fist he has not thrown in 7 years, at least, right? It looked bad. And it doesn't, to your point, yes, I would be embarrassed as a wrestler to have to sell for this shit. Because it's like, you want me to sell the punch slap? How am I supposed to sell the punch slap? Like, he was never the same after that.
Like, when Gunther No sold McAfee, it was phenomenal. Because, yeah, that's what you expect. The high level professional wrestler is not going to sell for the commentator guy, even if he does have some athletic prowess type thing. Here, he's going to get some moves in, and you're just like, no. But I get it. This actually does get spectacular.
It gets to a point, though. Like, I think if you're going to bring in these entertainment guys, they actually have to be ready to go that first intro spot. I'm not saying they need to throw a suplex or anything, but that punch bump needs to look good. Whether you're like a Tyrese Halliburton, a Pat McAfee, or a Jelly Roll, if that doesn't look good, that colors and honestly sets what the expectations are going to be going forward.
WWE and Fanatics announced a new multi-year licensing deal for Fanatics Betting and Gaming to produce and distribute WWE-themed online casino games in the U.S. market.
I'm just excited to play Uno at my local casino here in hopefully a couple of years.
I think they're putting Uno in casinos now.
They are. No, I'm joking about an actual story. They've been doing Uno rooms in a handful of casinos now, and I'm, like, not joking. That actually strikes me as fun. I do enjoy going and playing a little bit of blackjack, craps, you know, at like low stakes or whatever. But it's fun to get out there. And Uno would be a fun one to play.
I just think it's going to get annoying every time you spin a slot machine. The big dog from Michael Cole over and over and over again. I just don't need it. Or yeet. Yeet. Yeet.
I'm yeeting here, Pat. I think I hurt myself yeeting.
El Grande Americano announced for AAA, the Ludwig Kaiser version. You seem to really enjoy this.
I think it is a beautiful punchline to this whole El Gran Americano thing that actually completely defangs any criticism or concerns about the storyline. It makes it sort of funny, and if you can't have a laugh about it, you need to maybe stop taking yourself so damn seriously. Because here's the punchline, right? Now, all of a sudden, you have Ludwig Kaiser, a German immigrant, coming here and impressing the American-made guys as El Gran Americano. And you can certainly play into this with the Creeds becoming like really impressed with him. And maybe even still thinking it's Chad Gable, despite all of the obvious context clues that it's obviously not Chad Gable. Ivy has perhaps a bit of a crush on El Gran Americano, and then you can have the Scooby-Doo moment where you remove the mask, and it's Ludwig Kaiser, and like everyone's very confused that it's Ludwig Kaiser, definitely not American-made.
If you are an athlete on primetime television, it is time to get security on nights that you have to go to TV, because Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch's house in Los Angeles burgled during Raw. I think there were a couple of Major League Baseball stars who were burgled while they were at the All-Star game. And Seth Rollins also having a bit of a week. It does have a legitimate injury. Wrestling Observer kind of alluding that the injury angle is to cover up for an actual injury. I think his knee has to be scoped. It's one of those things. Again, I told you this before when he was wearing the brace. Knees are funny things, and they don't often heal all the way. But
no, I mean, I've had, you know, 3 knee surgeries. I know.
Other injuries and people are out. Adam Cole coming out during All In. Denounced he's going to be out indefinitely due to concussion syndromes suffered during the collision show where he got clotheslined by
Just become a manager, Adam. Just become a manager.
For Keith Lee in WWE, perhaps?
I mean, seriously.
Remember the uproar about that? Jeez.
I know, but wouldn't that have been
better?
Have been better for both of them as we look back? Explain to me where things worked out better for Keith and Adam because of not doing that.
I get the goodbye, but my God, it killed this crowd for when Dustin Rhodes was going to have his big moment in that match, winning his first title. But we'll get to that in the Lazy River because I have.
Can we go back to the Seth Rollins thing? So, like,
sure.
You know, hearing Meltzer get out early with this as being worked, I ended up going back and rewatching that spot. And I mean, I'm with you. I think like something clearly is wrong with his knee. I think he tweaked it during that moonsault spot. I in particular, it's like the senton where he rolls in on the knee. That couldn't have felt good. And then he went for the moonsault. And he took a long time to get back up. And the thing that makes me think he was injured at the end of that match is the cell on the blunt force trauma, which was not a Rollins cell. That was a dude collapsing into a heap. And I mean, you could probably go and watch Rollins sell the blunt force trauma in other scenarios and do a comparative shop here. I have not seen Seth Rollins just do a heap sell like that. Like that is the thing that stuck out to me is I can't think of the last time I've seen him sell like that. So it made me think something was wrong, which is why he was not doing the elastic rubber band style sell, because doing that would require extending the knee potentially in chaotic ways that he didn't want to do at that point.
I'll be honest. I thought that the nature of that sell and what he was doing was a red herring for when he would come out and cash in during the Goldberg match. I bought in that it might be that something smelled in it, but I also was like I wasn't putting all my chips on the table for that one because I was asking, is he wearing his knee brace still? Because I don't think he does anymore.
No, he doesn't.
He needs to.
He probably does.
Wears
yeah,
a
right.
sleeve. He probably wears a sleeve, but not the brace.
Not the brace. Yeah, and I mean, here's where I was also stopping. I'm like, dude, the heap cell is a true sandbag on LA Knight. So either LA Knight would have to be in on accepting a heap cell finish, or you'd be doing that deliberately to, you know, jam LA Knight's gears.
Yeah,
that is such a 80s, I'm not doing business with this brother sort of like way of, you know what I mean? Like it's such bad etiquette.
The Shawn Michaels oversell of Hogan.
Right.
And stuff.
The yeah. the oversell or undersell in the sense of give them absolutely nothing for the replay reel because it looks like shit. You know, God. Taking the perfect plex, but like a bag of shit.
Samoa Joe, the injury angle at All In was so that he could do press for the next season of Twisted Metal on Peacock. And Suri, who debuted, I believe, because I think she signed with AEW, in the Women's Gauntlet, grand opening, grand closing. She's now out with elbow surgery, so that does it for the injuries. Anything you want to comment on there, or do you want to further on Adam Cole commentary?
What can we say about Adam Cole that we didn't say 5 years ago?
Actually, you know what? I'll leave it at that. So we'll go into the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we had time for. And there was a lot, and not everybody got to everything. But I will say those having good weekends is women's... Oh, go ahead. You had something.
No. What was the final tally this week on all wrestling hours? Between All In, Saturday Night's Main Event, Evolution, Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, let's throw Collision in, that matters, and NXT.
SmackDown even? Yeah.
Right? No, I know. 30 hours? Right? 30 yeah. hours. I know, yeah. Right? So, good week for people starving for content.
But Jeff and Chris, this is your job. Just to review wrestling, and you get paid so handsomely for it.
Yeah, I know. I get paid so handsomely for it. Did I mention that I play bass for bands? And like, also, I mean, you know, for me, it's hours of wrestling. You know, it's a show searching for a stadium kind of vibe for me with that many hours of wrestling. I don't think wrestling is so white hot that we need 30 hours of it right now. And I mean, you would have to be, for me, just it's smack dab in the hottest weeks of the Monday Night Wars to have a week where you could really justify 25, 30 hours of wrestling. And even then, that would have been a burnout week in the Monday Night Wars.
Look, All In, if you started it at Ospreay and Swerve versus the Bucks and watched it from there, be an all-time great pay-per-view, and it would have great rewatchability, I think. I liked Tony and Monet. I liked the main event, but I will admit going to blood first kills the drama, and then just heightening it turns into a Japanese FMW match, which I don't think title matches should be necessarily. My mom's watching it, and she's just getting grossed out by the glass. She walked in the room. She just walked right back out. I was just like, yeah, I agree. You know, this is not for the faint of heart. And I get that. And I get that this is the type of match that Moxley wants to do. Other highlights. I thought the Goldberg match was good. The opener and the closer of Evolution were fantastic. That three-way between Becky, Bailey, and Lyra was great, as was Io versus Rhea. And I will also include, look, the cash-in, kind of, you know, for the purists who like their snowflakes and their star ratings, it probably takes half a star off because Naomi comes in, cashes in, wins the world title.
But she's very hot as a character right now, too.
Yeah, And yeah. But it made sense because these two were killing each other. Doing, I mean, Io and Rhea just have shockingly great chemistry together. To me, it's a shock because of the size differential. I'm not saying that they're not great wrestlers, but yeah. I think everybody more or less had a pretty good week, except for NXT, which is dying because it has too many people who aren't from NXT on it. It's Evolve. It's TNA. We're doing stories about people who were just waiting to have their little shift here and then leave. We have Jordan Grace, who gets turned on 1 week after a partnership. And now Jordan Grace, who was much hotter when she wasn't signed by the company, is going to be here to put over Blake Monroe too. I think NXT is a mess because we don't have any emotional investment in any of these characters. They're just going through certain wrestling tropes in search of a story for the most part. At the Great American Bash, you know, it wasn't that it was bad. Cause like, look, Ricky Saints and Ethan Page are pros. The title match was good, but you know, other than that, it's there, man.
That, I mean, and the title match was good, but it's just the Josh Briggs stuff in that match.
Forced.
And it is, when we talk about the AEW main event, I want to make sure that I'm real consistent about this, so the NXT main event's not a bad place for me to start at this point. Whenever you introduce that much story into a match, you distract from the work. I and Jeff probably both wanted Obafemi and Inamura beating the crap out of each other, tossing them around, big hoss fight. I didn't need Briggs out there. I didn't need Briggs involved in this at all. Inamura comes up short is a perfectly fine storyline because we know Obafemi's a dominant champion. And Obafemi, at the end of the match, picking up Inamura and respecting him like a warrior, absolutely takes care of Inamura, especially if he's had a hoss match with Obafemi. Like, just earning the respect of a mighty champion and being respected as a formidable warrior in all of this is more than enough story for this match. It's totally sufficient, and then you can do the Briggs stuff on this week's TV. Whenever you introduce other characters into it, you stretch out the scene in a way that doesn't necessarily help. Stay tuned for when we talk about the AEW main event, because I got thoughts about how many characters we got in that. But yes, absolutely. Inamura and Obafemi is just a pairing should work. You know, the other NXT issues, like look at the D'Angelo family crap. This stuff sucks. No one cares about Stack Lorenzo at this point. No one really cares about the family staying together. And in that match, because everyone's just kind of fatigued with this, the person they were cheering for was Luca, like, who was supposed to be kind of in the middle here, but they're all kind of like, at least he does something new. We haven't seen Luca do anything yet. So let's see what Luca does. And he had a nice match, by the way. I thought Luca actually showed out.
That three-way was pretty good.
The story's just stupid as hell.
Yes. Yeah.
And then wistful Tony looking back at his fedora. Oh, come on. It's Trilby. It's not even a fedora. He wears a Trilby. He doesn't even wear the right hat.
I'm going to go back to All In. And I mentioned this during the news. You can't bring the crowd down with an Adam Cole goodbye and then cynically try and calculate that we can get the crowd fired back up for the belt he vacated by giving Dustin Rhodes his first singles championship when everybody expected Adam Cole to lose that title, Kyle Fletcher. Listening to this crowd, and then finally they came around when he cried, but it's a match with three baby faces and one heel.
And one belt that doesn't matter.
And a belt that doesn't matter. A guy that everybody kind of still loves leaving. You know, let's just give Kyle Fletcher the belt, make him the heel, and make us hate him for a little bit. And it was just one of those things where I'm like, I get it. They're in Texas. We want to bring the crowd back up. But this is like when
pandering and lame.
Well, when they anticipate, like WWE used to do this all the time in scripts where they go, people will boo here, wait a little bit. And sometimes the audience would not play along and it would be shocking because they'd be waiting for their cue to die in. It's like, oh, they didn't boo there. I have to keep going with my script type of a thing. I found that a little pander bearish. The start of Dynamite. And here's where I'll
on the TNT title. I just want to say this. Like, the visual that is going to be burned in my head for the next several months is of Mercedes Moné with her seven belts behind her, mm-hmm. of which I could not name a majority of. And if I showed them to a lot of fans, people who own AEW t-shirts and wear them once a week, I guarantee you they could not get 7 out of 7. They could maybe get 4 or 5, but they're not getting all 7. They'll go, oh, I know that one. I know that. What's that one? Their belts mean nothing. And the Dustin Rhodes getting this belt, doing this press conference afterwards with Tony Khan, this visual, like this TNT title really means something. Man, This company has made it so that even the world title doesn't really mean something.
Oddly enough, the TNT title means something because of his brother. And they can't mention him. So it's weird on that front, but here's where I'll transition into the main event, to the pay-per-view, and also the beginning of Dynamite this week. I thought the second half of Hangman's promo was fantastic. I do. It's the first half where he's kind of taking on the same catharsis that a lot of people after All In had of this whole thing being a metaphor for not only the feud with WWE, but also the whole Hangman Punk stuff. And oh, we built this company from the ground up, and you, the fans, deserve the corporate fealty route that way. It's not exactly grassroots, because we did have a money guy behind it. It wasn't exactly a thing, and we had a TV deal going in. The Horatio Alger story is nice, and in comparison to WWE, yes, it is a rags-to-riches story in some ways. In some ways, it isn't. But I just don't need the metaphor stuff. I like the world of professional wrestling, and you could just be in that world as their champion and saying that you are the best and doing it without all the here. It's a greater story about the wrestling industry as a whole that I won this title. It's not.
No, the worst part about the metaphor for me, Jeff, is that the metaphor is a retcon. That this is not the story they were actually telling. They weren't telling any story. And if you had asked anybody, to wit, if you had asked anybody 8 weeks ago, what is the story right now? Not even Joseph Lanza would have been like, oh, well, obviously, Chris, this is a metaphor between WWE. Now, he didn't know what was going on either. Rich and Joe didn't know. No one knew. That's how you know this is a retcon. So spare me this shit of, oh, we were telling this super nuanced thing. Because the metaphor was never particularly clear with the Death Riders. Like, they were never presented as guys who really loved WWE, with Marina Shafir, WWE stan number one, and they're putting they put the title in the briefcase to bring it back to Vince. That wasn't the story. No one, Dave didn't know it, Joe didn't know it, I didn't know it, Jeff didn't know it, nobody knew it. It's a retcon. It's a retcon. You know, like nobody knew that 8 weeks ago, and nobody could have, because it didn't exist as a story. And I mean, for me, I look at this, the finish to this story for me was deeply unsatisfying. As I'm looking at the text, what I see is like a mishmash of way too many people in a scene. This is supposed to be Adam Page, the guy who has gone and proven himself through the gauntlet of other potential worthy challengers that he's the most worthy of the worthy challengers, and is supposed to have an individual accomplishment overcoming the mean big bad John Moxley in his kind of ultimate arena, Moxley's preferred venue of combat. And instead, what I get is it seems to be the AEW trope of how they belt babyface champions, which has not worked yet to make a hot babyface champion, wherein you have a crew of other baby faces that we like designed to get pops at key strategic moments in the beats of this match coming out to assist the main character, the main protagonist in his journey in the match. It's like,
yeah,
Tony Khan likes to tell the entire hero's journey in the match. And when you do that, it takes away from the individual accomplishment of an Adam Page to quit. Yes, see Tony Schiavone talking about how totally awesome it was that Darby Allin came back from Everest, and in that nifty. Well, I mean, the story was about Adam Page, right? Like, you know,
not the team effort to overcome John Moxley,
right? And it makes everybody. If anything, it looks like, you know, John Moxley is Gulliver and he's getting overtaken by the Lilliputians.
He's tied with a hundred strings, cannonballs coming at him.
And the crowd chants, "You tapped out, you tapped out."
Yeah, I had a chain around my neck and he was trying to kill me. I tapped out.
That's
I'm
the
such
other
a coward.
Thing.
Oh, no.
Right. The coward is the setup for the cowardice spot, because you clearly want the crowd to chant "you tapped out," is something that no one plausibly wouldn't tap out in. I do not know a human being who's like, "Well, you know, I guess I'll just have my neck snapped."
Well, you know, I think I'll die for my company in this championship.
This is not getting choked out versus passing out. This is flirting with getting your neck snapped by metal.
I don't know. All those online fans are, well, you know, if you cared about AEW, John Moxley, you would die for us.
There was a lot. There's a lot wrong with this, not the least of which is Swerve's involvement. Swerve shows up, and it is, I want to say it was like a little over 90 seconds or something like that, maybe like 120 seconds between Swerve showing up and Paige winning the match. Even the final beats of this match, Paige is getting assisted by everybody in the world. And you can go, "Oh, well, that sets up challengers." Yeah, but that only sets up challengers because their argument is, "I helped you win the title." Like, you know, yes. I right? Like the argument is, well, you're kind of a weak champion. You wouldn't have won the title if I hadn't interceded.
Are you in the camp that, because I understand this thinking, and there were people who were very disappointed by this Dynamite because it was just kind of banger matches and not really the Raw after WrestleMania style of Dynamite, which...
Or insofar as it was silly.
Well, but AEW doesn't do that. AEW isn't about, for lack of a better term, the sizzle in terms of the hot angle that they're going to introduce after the pay-per-view for the next guy. They're going to tell you, "Oh, these two great wrestlers are going to have a great match, and now we're going to build it," type of a thing.
Yeah.
No, through 8-man tags and 6-man tags, apparently. Okay, cool.
And the payoff was Justin Roberts roasting Nick and Matt Jackson in his announcements, which didn't... This is not Jim Cornette getting the pie in his face and losing his trousers. This honestly made Justin Roberts just kind of come off as unprofessional and petty, that he won't just do... like the regular announcement, he has to like rub it in their faces that they're not the vice presidents anymore. But that didn't mean anything. You know what I mean? Yeah, like them, it's just they don't have these titles anymore. It's there you
go. All of a sudden they're broke, as if they don't have large contracts as talent. in the 80s.
And that still historically, they're not the founding fathers of this company. I mean, the term is stupid, but like, yes, obviously they're founders of the company.
Yes, that all goes away. That's
there are certainly some. There's certainly some in the world who would like to be able to do things like that, but that's actually not how it works.
Some guy named Pete is now the founder of AEW because the vice president, or Eric Bischoff, founded AEW because of his criticism of professional wrestling, or some dumb crap like that. I'm gonna swing back to Raw real quick, because this goes into a match I really liked on Evolution. I loved that three-way. What in the hell are we doing with Bayley? Is she the new Natty? Is that what we've determined? Because we need to get rid of Natty in that case. I understand that both Becky and Bayley want to get Lyra over. They both care about her deeply. She's one of their children. I like that. That's cool. Bayley went from big-time babyface and legend to petulant jerk in record time in this whole feud when she was the one who was screwed out of WrestleMania. How does this happen? How do we not figure out a way to give her, because we can't make her look good, because we don't want her involved in the feud with the two people we want feuding, so keep her out of the feud until it's done. How about that?
Because I'm hard-pressed to come up with an example of the sum is less than the parts. Like, a better example of this than this Bayley, Lyra, Becky thing. Like, theoretically, you add all these together and you come out with one sum. And what we are instead getting is, like, negative energy. It's like a subtraction problem.
Okay, so we've gotten back to SummerSlam where it's going to be Becky and Lyra. All right. Does anybody think that Bayley's not probably going to screw Lyra out of this match or this title? I don't know. I just, the end game here is possibly to make Lyra a bigger star, but I don't see how this happens where you don't want to beat Becky this quick. You're doing weird things with Bayley, who still has a lot of cash from the crowd as a living legend of women's wrestling and a trailblazer. They all respect the hell out of her and they all like her and they all want to root for her.
It feels like the logical out is to make Bayley and Becky heels together.
That's what it feels like is going to happen.
But yes, I'm with you. It's baffling to do so when everyone just wants to like Bayley as a veteran still in her prime.
And possibly, far be it for me to bring this up, possibly to feud with the team of Charlotte and Alexa Bliss. And I'll tell you something, Charlotte had a good night at Evolution. That tag team match was decent, it wasn't great, but it was good. And Charlotte had a chip on her shoulder and was looking to prove something, and she had a great night. But making Charlotte, if they do what I think they might do.
The horsewomen only with Alexa.
Only with Alexa. And Alexa, look, Alexa and the one missing from the horsewomen are the two that have the issues with each other for the most part. So that would be fascinating. Charlotte being a baby face against a heel Bayley and Becky would be something. I don't know if it works. I'm just kind of gobsmacked by it all, to be honest with you. I am.
I mean, I think they all end up heels. And actually at this point, that would probably be the best thing to do with Charlotte, Becky, and Bayley, because it just doesn't feel like, with Charlotte and Becky in particular, individual stories just don't friggin' work with these two anymore. They are really tedious characters as performers. They do not carry their scenes. Sorry, but it's true. Becky duds it up in scenes a lot, and Charlotte
stinks. She does her Jeff Goldblum thing.
Yes, and Charlotte stinks. Charlotte often is eating up the person she's supposed to be working the scene with. So, like, the best thing that could happen at this point is you just throw the three of them into a faction. This is no knock on Bayley. It's just kind of doing the best with these three pieces. And make them all heels. And then the new young wrestlers coming up from Evolve or whatever subdivision of this company you want to bring them up from can feud with the horsewomen.
Yeah, I agree. Your turn, sir. Do you have anything?
Okay. All right. So Man, you know, we can do NXT just, you know, kind of coming out of this. It's like,
you can. I'm not going to. I had no interest in this show.
Dark State continues to just stink, right?
Yes.
Like Dark State, they had the other guy in Dark State wrestle this week, and he's kind of talented. The
pants?
One we haven't.
The guy
not
with pants?
Pants. Not oh. Pants guy. I want to say Saquon Sugars. Is the
okay.
Yeah, Sugars was kind of good.
The guy raised on the guy who was educated on the streets. Not
educated on the streets, yes, and yes. Booker likes it. No, but he had a few nice spots in this. Pants guy is Pants guy. We all know that. Cutler James, and that's why they put Pants guy. Who they call him Cutler, but he doesn't wear cutoffs. Isn't that interesting? And think about that. Think about that. Carmen Petrovic. My God, we just made her look like an absolute goober here in that spot.
I think she has a great look. She has a great skill set for wrestling. The sword is kind of
a bit much. It's a bit much. Yeah.
But she has great kicks and stuff. But if I'm her, number one, I turn off my phone. And number two, I start trying to think of a personality. Because they did that Ashante the Adonis dating thing.
Ooh, she needs. You're right. That's a yellow flag.
She needs to cut some promos, or she needs to do something, because I believe she's in her early 30s. They haven't made her look good in a long time.
I know.
I like her, but I'm wondering now. It's like if you're in there not only to make the evolve person look good, but also then to get destroyed by, hey, look, rampaging babyface, who are going to make unlikable by being rampaging and beating up people who are just trying to have a match. Okay.
You know who would actually be a good tag partner for her, especially if they kind of worked out some offense together? Her and Lola Vice.
With her MMA background.
Yeah, exactly. They get the kicking spots and that sort of stuff going on here.
I think they did that at some point.
Yeah, right? Like, you kind of, you know, do Team Kick 2.0 or whatever.
Lola got a spot in the women's battle royal where she got to dance with Nikki Bella. That's the rub. That one NXT. The NXT people got rubs in that thing, like, because about three of them were eliminated, like, immediately. Kehlani Jordan got the Kofi spot.
Freaking Lash Legend. Walking
on her hands. Lash Legend, who they like. They do. She's big, I guess. I don't know.
Plateau Lash is what we can call her, because she had that one little ramp up, and she has been an absolute plateau ever since. She's a low Mesa.
And I would say that Jada Parker got a little bit in there, but not much.
No, right. And if anything, the crowd's more ready to go there with Miss Parker, but it's inconsistent presentation of her, Lola Vice. You know, in some cases,
Thea Hale,
right? And to me, the frustrating thing with the Lash project is kind of twofold. Like, one, Lash just, to me, has not shown – she has not shown in the ring that she can do more. If anything, you have her do these power spots, and it's questionable if you want to leave your feet for her. We've sat here on this show in the last 6 months a couple of times talking about – I don't know. I'd leave my feet for Lash Legend if I was one of these people in the ring with her.
You were exactly correct on the presentation of JC Jane.
Yeah.
It is going to be the I banana peel my way out, but I'm never going to be. I'm never going to have. She's never going to have any heft as a champion, I don't think, until this Fatal Influence crew, which Wade had a bad night, kept calling him Fatal Attraction.
No, this is a this is a parallel to the AEW making your babyface champion thing. It's kind of like if you always have all this help and everything. That works for a heel in the sense that they're, you know, they're kind of a worm champion or whatever. But then it does hurt a JC Jane that she's never really taken seriously as a champion. But, you know,
it's a missed title run is what it is.
You know, it might be, or it might be a Mandy Rose thing where it starts off looking squishy and then it gets tougher and tougher as it goes on. And at the end, Mandy, I thought, was a really formidable champion.
I did too.
Presentation.
I did too. I thought that was the best. That was one of the better rehab projects.
Yeah. No, I thought that was a tremendous redemption arc for her career. She should be very proud of that run in her wrestling career because I thought she was extraordinarily solid.
She got a pack. I mean, she figured out, okay, here's my personality. Here's how we're going to run with it. And within this, how I present myself still as a champion and as a leader and as an alpha. I thought, yeah, it was good. I have nothing else for the Lazy River, sir.
I'm kind of there with you. The Don Callis family as a storyline on Dynamite just continues. It's so perplexing to me because it manages to have so much heat with the audience, and yet there's just nothing to it. Like, Don Callis basically just twists his mustache on the microphone for however long he's on commentary.
And he only manages the people that are important in his family. Otherwise, he's on commentary talking. You notice that?
Yeah.
He'll go out for Okada, and he'll still manage for him. But if it's the Hechicero Josh Alexander crew, well, I'm going to go on the microphone here. You guys don't need me kind of thing. And really, it really stands out for me, to be honest with you.
Every time I see Josh Alexander, I get that it's like sort of the gimmick he's doing, but there's this line from the Clerks animated cartoon series that keeps popping into my head. If you've never seen it, guys, it's only, I think, like 6 episodes, and they're pretty funny, too. It's a quick watch. You'll get it all.
I recall liking it. I'm not the biggest Clerks fan in the world.
No, it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. I've rewatched them the last few years. They still land really good. There's Alec Baldwin, who obviously I think is a contemptuous man, but is actually quite funny on there as the mayor, Leonardo, because it actually kind of plays into like the shittiest aspects of Alec Baldwin's personality on voice. And so I think it works really well. And every time I see Josh Alexander, I'm reminded of this scene where Dante goes, oh my God, they're doing like a Bad News Bear parody. And we're seeing all the kids. And we see who Dante and Randall's team is going to be. And it's all, of course, the schlubby kids from the town. And Dante goes, oh, my God, it's the kid in the helmet. And Leonardo goes, yes, look at him. And that's every time I see
you're,
Josh.
You're the king of the arcane reference this week because 3 people will get that joke, I think.
But if you watch it, you'll every time. Oh my God! It's the kid in the helmet. Yes, look at him.
So let's move to Vader Club. Then was my pick this week. I felt like picking a Vader match. I felt like picking a Dustin match. I was looking through some All Japan tag too, but I landed on this from Clash 29: Dustin Rhodes versus Vader. My God, I so again it's the Shaq meme. I'm sorry, I was not aware of your game, Dustin Rhodes. Watching him hit those ropes is just a work of art every time I see when he was in his 20s and getting that momentum, and then the momentum enables him to do power moves against Vader, and Vader selling these power moves. The ending stinks, but the move is great, but then Hacksaw coming out to save him. No buys, but, you know, it goes through. Dustin gets some shine. Vader then starts laying in those forearm punches that he loves to do. And, I really enjoyed this. What did you think of it?
Yeah, so whenever I see young Dustin, he's so much taller than I think you realize as Goldust Dustin. I mean, obviously the same guy. It's just like Goldust comes off so much more like slender and wormy. It's such a credit to how good he is as a performer.
Well, I would also say it's also just part and parcel of WWF, WWE at that time. If you're not 6'4", you're not in that company. And so everybody's tall and big. So Goldust looks kind of small compared to, I mean, like Booker T is a large man.
Right? Yeah.
Even
like,
though he's
like 6'5".
Yeah, even though he's svelte and he's he was the small guy in his tag team, but he's still a big guy. You know, Bradshaw's a big dude. Everybody in that company was big except maybe the Hurricane at that time. So yeah, Goldberg looks small compared to a lot of people. And also the bodysuit, I think it was one of those things where it kind of, mm-hmm. I mean, he was never jacked, but he was never thin either. But he does look a little bit smaller.
It makes WWE. Him look slender. Yeah, right, right. No, I know it's not the same thing. But yes, here you just see, like, Dustin comes off as bigger. Like, even the way he hits the ropes, you know, like, when he's hitting the ropes, there's a lot more of Dustin kind of draping over the top of it as
yes.
he's coming off, right?
He kind of changes his locomotion entirely.
Yeah, it's awesome.
He goes into the ropes, and Barry Windham kind of does this, but not to this aspect. He wants to make sure he's going all the way into the rope, so he leaves his feet and kind of jumps in and throws his hip into it. And then bounces off like that, just running full speed. It's really something to behold, especially on that opening sequence in this match.
Yeah, and I mean, I just as I'm watching this and like just thinking about what he would be wrestling like in just a handful of years. Like, I mean, we're talking 2-3 years later, right? He's so interesting because he's able to just completely change almost all of his wrestling style from top to bottom. Locomotion and how he delivers things. I mean, maybe his overhand punching, like in the corner and stuff, stays kind of similar, but he doesn't like cowboy kick or anything in a few years. I mean, so this is like completely different wrestling style from him. That is, yes, at once reminiscent of his father, but Barry Windham, totally. You definitely see a lot of Barry Windham going on with this as well. It's just, I think, you know, the cowboy stuff was a bit played out by 1990. What year is this? 94.
Oh, this is
94. Oh, 94. We're in a flannel era, and you're selling me cowboy boots, you know?
Well, that we still haven't broken him out of the shadow of Dusty.
Yep.
Because Dusty's returned to the company. Shout out to Harley Race for taking a hell of a bump. Even though the camera misses.
I love Harley as a manager. He's so fun.
He's only like 43 in this thing, or like he's like in his mid-40s or something, but he's walking like he's like 80 in this match. But he's like he kind of has a slick look in this match too. It's not that out of date tuxedo. He's kind of
almost
dare
like Bobby
I say
Heaton.
Modern. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, very Bobby. That's a great call. Very, you know, that kind of smoking jacket Bobby Heenan look. Kind of. Yeah.
I always loved this pairing because it just, the story was always built in and made sense. Harley Race, the former champion, wanted to hitch his wagon to a guy he figured would always have the belt going forward. That way he was always in the title conversation for his entirety of his retirement. Perfect
and also,
story as a manager.
And also just wanting to take out enemies that were related to his enemies, kind
yep.
of.
Yep. Yep.
That was always
it allowed him to settle old scores, keep him in. It's such a good manager story. Like, it built-in motivations all over the place. You don't have to overtell because, like, if you know anything about him, it's already done. You don't have to write a whole bunch of it.
I'll live vicariously through you, Luger, or you, Vader, or whatever. I dig this. But let's wrap it up there. This has been Shake the Ropes. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow the show just at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Listen to all the shows on the super feed, in addition to just downloading the show on our own feed. That way we get 2 downloads from you. That'd be awesome. Chris is on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. Let him get his plugs in now.
Yeah, I'm doing the vocals on the last song for this album here. So we're now into the mastering stages. I've been told I should have the single back soon. I mentioned that last time, but like I'm done. I've got to do some verses here this weekend, and then we are we're tying the knot on this thing for right now. I got a couple of outstanding instrumentals that'll be held in the Disney vault. So go and subscribe to my Spotify. Chris Novembrino is the Spotify. You can go and subscribe to on Instagram. I'm DOCTOR_NOV. Dr. Nov is my name-o. And y'all keep reaching for the stars.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hey kids, Jeff Hawkins from Shake Them Ropes here, and for almost 15 years we have been part of Voices of Wrestling. Myself and Chris Novembrino give a review of that week's news, the lazy river of wrestling criticism of that week's WWE and AEW, and then Vader Club, where we watch something from one of our past, or something we may have missed. Smart, snarky, and sometimes serious, but not always. That's us, and if that's your vibe, we'd love to have you listen to Shake Them Ropes every week on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.